oh my. Put me in, coach, I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn two in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn two in every way, so I turn to you two today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it in the points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn two. Turn two, what it do? Win leads.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Turn 2 Podcast, brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. We are well on our way into the regular season, and today I have a very special guest to talk all about bullpens, everyone's favorite topic, everyone's favorite nightmare. So without further ado, from Fantasy Alarm, from The Athletic, Mr. Greg Jewett. He is the author of Coffee and Closers. It's a fantastic, like an email newsletter you should sign up for. He also has an indispensable chart that breaks down closers and hierarchy. That is just one of the best tools you can use in the, you know, it's a very difficult thing to follow. So Greg, just jumping right into it. Welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. And I appreciate the kind words. I know it's my poor girlfriend. We started dating last year amidst COVID. We met right before it. And then we started going steady during COVID. So and I told her, I was like, my life's never this like slow in this time of year. And now she understands.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's gotta be the most important thing to track. I mean, I'm over here. Like I've been looking at like pitch velocity and max exit velocity for hitters. Cause there's only so many things from an analytics standpoint you can track that is actionable early in the season, other than at bats. Mm-hmm. And what teams are doing, like the Rockies, to see if they have any rhyme or reason to what they're doing. But bullpens is a huge deal. I mean, especially in high, you know, not only in shallow leagues and in deep mix, because I don't know what's more annoying. I mean, I would say in deep mixed leagues, like 15 team, you have to roster more people. Therefore, at least it kind of lowers the possibilities. So I don't know if it'll this year will be more of a nightmare in a shallow format where you have to really make severely tough decisions. But you know, we're going to go team by team, you know, briefly and kind of cover what has been happening so far with usage. And as far as 12 team versus 15 team, whether we think who absolutely 100% needs to be rostered, and for like 15 teams, who are the best kind of stashes going forward, kind of based on that. Before we get started, yeah. Underdog Fantasy, everyone who's listened, we've covered them all preseason long, some of the best ball value in all the industry. Right now, when you get into the regular season, they're doing DFS and best ball. Use promo code TURN2 and get in some of their contests. You can get some of them for like as cheap as $3, and you can do a whole bunch of really interesting pick'em games where, you know, a bunch of different prop bets, you know, over under on total bases, strikeouts for different pitchers. And it's just a lot of fun. You do it daily. It's something that you don't have to put a whole lot of time into. That's a lot of fun. So again, go to the app store, go to Underdog Fantasy, download the app and do promo code TURN2 with your first deposit for a money back guarantee during your first month. If you don't love it, they'll give you your money right back. So go check that out. It's very addictive. So jumping into the point of the show, let's just start alphabetically using your chart. If anyone wants to follow along, go follow our boy here on Twitter right now and download. You can open up his the closer chart, and we're going to go team by team, starting with the Baltimore Orioles. Everyone assumed when Hunter Henry, I'm thinking football here. Everyone assumed when I can't even think of his name. I'm like, Hunter Harvey. I now have Hunter Henry in my mind. So that's going to be sticking around for a while. So Hunter Harvey goes down. The majority of the industry jumps onto Tanner Scott, as he seems like the most likely guy to get the job as far as being effective, but he is a left-hander. So it's something to worry about. Cesar Valdez, who's an amazing story to root for, coming in there with his, 84 mile an hour fastball or whatever it is. He seems to, usage wise, be the guy right now. But, you know, I would say it's very, very up in the air. So, yeah, tell us your tale. Baltimore Orioles, who do you think, what do you think is going to go, if you had to make your best guess, what do you think is going to go on for the rest of the season?
Well, you spoke off air before we get on here about 12, 15 team format. I think in a 12 team format, I would probably avoid the situation just for the simple fact that, one, you're talking volume. So the number of saves, all right, so they had two early versus the Red Sox, but that's not going to be the case as the season goes on. You know, Brandon Hyde has yet to name a closer during his tenure in Baltimore. Like, he's never said, hey, this is my closer. Starting from, for the last 3 years, not including the season, the leader for saves in that time is Michael Givens with 11. So, you know, you're not talking a huge volume area, and he does like to play matchups late in games. So we don't really know. Now, they just sent out Cole Sulcer to the alternate site because they're going to be churning and burning arms. There's a very good chance that Tanner Scott could still get 10 saves. There's a very good chance that Cesar Valdez could get 10 saves, but, you know, in a shallower format, it's very, very risky. And you touched upon Valdez. And again, I'm pulling for him too, because it's cool. The guy throws his changeup about 75% of the time. People know it's coming and they're still not hitting it. And he looks a little unflappable. It's kind of funny because the other day with Boston, he had the first two. He hit a guy and then gave up a base hit. And then they started getting Barnes up in the bullpen in case they tied or went ahead. And then you got him out in order from that point on and notched the game. So, yeah, I would tread very lightly here. And one thing I wanted to talk to, and you were talking to on the intro, is, you know, we're very bad chasing saves because we always add them a week too late. And we have to try and stay a week too early. So, you know, when you add Cesar Valdez on Monday and FOB, you don't get the two saves you got from last week. Those are gone. And I think it's a very big point because before we go through all the other teams, there's been 34 saves so far. So actually the save percentage is up in baseball. That's 57.6 games this year have ended with a save. Last year, the total for the whole season was 48.5. However, of those, 13 saves are probably from guys that weren't either active on a roster or were added after. You're talking Julian Merriweather, Brooks Raley, Randy Dobnak, Chad Green. People might've had Green if you were owned Chapman and you handcuffed them. Corey Knebel, Ryan Weathers, Alec Mills, Jose Alvarado, he might have been owned, Wade Davis, Mike Myers, Jesse Hahn, and Chris Devensky. Okay. so that's 13 out of those 34 saves. So that's what we're looking at, 38%. So if you'd say Alvarado maybe, and Chad Green and Mills, I'll give you Mills might have been in a lineup in a deeper league. So that's 10 of those. So you're still talking almost one third of the saves that have occurred in 2021 happened on with people not on a roster. So now that number looks pretty, but then you're like, wait a minute, because you know we're all chasing it. So I don't know. And we'll go through the teams, but I just want to put that number out there. It hasn't been over 50% with games ending in a save since 2018.
Yeah. It's been weird with the cold weather. I cover pitch mix changes. A lot of starters are throwing like 75% fastballs. Jacob DeGrom did it last night. Mm-hmm. I know Nola was way up. I think it's just by cold weather design. They're not feeling their off-speed stuff. And I think some of the hitters are just not getting going too. So I think there's just been some lower scoring games, but we'll get into them. Randy Dobnak. I'm willing to bet a lot of people, at least in 15 teams, had him in their lineup because I think
they might've had him, but the five runs.
Yes. That's going to take a toll. People like are trying to start guys like that to piggyback starters to sneak a win. So you get a save, but at what cost? So moving on, we had discussed the Orioles already. Cesar Valdez, Tanner Scott, the main two. Like you said, it's not necessarily bad to roster a closer on a bad team if there's one closer. I call it like the Chad Cordero scenario. He like led the league in saves with the Nationals when they were bad. But yeah, you don't want to split a pot when you don't know how many saves will be. So moving on to the Boston Red Sox, who look awfully terrible right now. The main two guys going into the year was Matt Barnes. The Yankees give away Adam Ottavino to save money. And then today they trade for Rougned Odor. Interesting enough, we'll see how much money the Rangers eat. But for how hard the Yankees work to get under that salary cap, it's interesting they take that money on. The most interesting reliever in this bullpen right now is probably like Sawamura. So, what would you do right now? I mean, is this they're on paper, they're obviously a lot better than the Orioles. Is this a situation you're really happy to invest in a 15 team? I guess you have to look at everything, but how about 12 team?
And a 12 team, I'd be willing to do it if Barnes gets the role. He was warming, as I alluded to, when Valdez was struggling the other day. And here's another one. The beat writers all offseason said Adam Ottavino would not come into a dirty inning. And then he did yesterday. He came in with runners on and struck a guy out. But I think this sets up as Barnes' role to lose. But Barnes and Ottavino are both pending free agents. And if Boston does not play well this year, and I don't know how you feel, but I don't see them being an above 500 team. They're going to be trading both of them before the trade deadline. So then if you're taking the long view, like in an AL only or a 15 teamer, then you stash Sawamura and you wait for him to hopefully get the role in June or July.
I think that I saw a path to them being good. It would have required all their pitchers to remain healthy and guys like Garrett Richards to work out. So, I mean, it requires them to be perfect and no one is. So yeah, like you said, that's the likely scenario. The White Sox, we don't have to spend a lot of time on. Liam Hendricks is their guy. Let's just, again, knock on wood. I'm not jinxing anything. Liam Hendricks, for whatever reason, becomes unavailable. You know, whatever. I mean, he's abducted by aliens. Whatever he decides to do. Who's the guy you run out and get? Is it, because of Tony La Russa being kind of old school, is it Aaron Bummer being the left-hander, or do we see something crazy like Michael Kopech, who's throwing gas out there to get an inning? Would Aaron Bummer be the slam dunk next guy in line, like everyone would assume?
I think he would be. Now, his
I'm putting you on the spot. If you're perfect. Wrong, we're all blaming.
Yeah, no, it's all, no, no. Of course, that comes with the job. But I think he would be. And we would just have to see. But, you know, they said glowing things about Bummer in the offseason. I'm not too worried about that. I love Crochet and I love Kopech. I just feel like they're just going to keep them more in that 1.2 winning, two inning outing thing. So I wanted them to get more hold chances. We'll have to see if that develops. They said they're going to use Crochet in the seventh inning, but we haven't really seen it yet. But that's pending. But, you know, both of those guys have – now, in a 15-team mixer, I like having both of them, especially if you have daily moves, because you can move them in and out and rack up strikeouts and protect your ratios. But, yeah, probably Bummer. But that it's funny, that bullpen for is being as touted as it was has struggled early on. They had leads in three of those four games in L.A.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to one of the more confusing teams, Cleveland Indians. Going into spring training, at least it seemed like a two-horse race. There was two camps, two schools of thought. It was James Karinchak is a strikeout machine. Of course, he's the closer, or he walks people. Cleveland wants to keep people down with service time. They're going to let Nick Whitgren run away with the boring guy. And all of a sudden, Emmanuel Clase, a guy that everyone knew had closer stuff, but no one really, at least in spring training, that's being honest, was giving him credit as being a legitimate part of this. It was more of a two-man guy. Right now, if you had to guess, which this is one of the hardest teams, I guess, to predict the future, he seems to be the head of the pack. And on your closer chart, you have him out front right now.
Yeah, I adjusted him there because the one game in Detroit where Soto gave up the two-run home run, it was Clase warming up, and just like the other day with Barnes. Clase was warming up in case they tied the game or got the lead. So if you're using somebody in the ninth inning on the road, that told me that it was going to be Clase getting that save chance if it happened. So I just reacted to it and I moved him to the front of the heap until Terry Francona forces me to alter my thinking. I still think Karinchak will get some saves, but I do think it's going to be one of those things where they use him like they used when everyone got frustrated with the Cody Allen, Andrew Miller mess when they had it back in the day. So I still think he's a factor for saves, but I think it's going to depend on how the game flow is. And again, he was out there pitching last night, when it wasn't necessarily a save situation. So we just have to adjust to all those things. I still think right now, but it's funny because Whitgren did not look good his first thing, but I wouldn't count him out. This could still end up being a three-headed thing. It makes us all shake our heads. So it's really up to Terry Francona.
I think Nick Whitgren is the first very interesting name we've talked about as far as 15 team leagues go, because people are, there's guys getting injured. If you have a short bench, he's someone you have to make a decision on. And are you keeping him? Or are you cutting him? Let's just say you have a need, Tatis went down for you, or you're waiting for, you're waiting for someone else to come back and you really need that roster spot. Maybe you need a closer and you had an opportunity to someone dropped Jordan Romano because they're on the Merriweather bandwagon. Let's just see. There's another interesting guy that, you know, we'll talk to a bunch of interesting people later on. Jake Diekman was available or something. Is Nick Wickren, do you feel comfortable dropping him if you have a need, or are you still trying to hold on to him in leagues where pretty much every reasonable option for the most part is owned?
In that situation, I'd be okay moving on. You know, even if he's getting ancillary saves, I mean, even in the situation of him and Karinchak, it wasn't going to be a full-time role. So yeah. I'm okay moving on if I'm getting somebody I know that's in at least a primary share. We want clarity. We're all searching for clarity as much as it's not out there.
Yeah. And he's not like someone like,
and he doesn't rack up strikeouts and have awesome ratios. I mean, it's not like he's
not going to offer you value unless he's getting you saves. Cause there's guys that are interesting, like Peter Fairbanks, we'll get to the Rays. It looks like there's a 1A, but we'll get to him. But a guy like Fairbanks, and at least we'll get you, you know, the strikeouts. Whereas Wickren is if he's not giving you saves, it's kind of, you know, he's kind of worthless. No offense to him. As far as fantasy goes, the Detroit Tigers, Gregory Soto does not look good, but they continue to wheel him out there. Brian Garcia, you have him marked in bright red on your chart for a reason.
I had trepidation about him before the season. And then during today's recording, this is Tuesday afternoon, he pitched the fifth inning today. Mm. That doesn't sound like a closer to me. So, I'm okay. Maybe if you want to see what happens with Soto, I thought they were looking at somebody else as a dark horse, but one beat writer, Cody Stavenhagen of The Athletic, did mention that he could see a pathway where Michael Fulmer could take like the John Smoltz role to success in the bullpen. So if you're looking for a deep league, you know, Hail Mary, I would keep very close tabs on the usage of Michael Fulmer going forward. His velocity is ticked up as a reliever, and he only has to throw two or three pitches. You know, so he doesn't have to bring the whole arsenal. You can almost see like the Gausman thing where he healed himself in the Reds bullpen, focusing on two pitches. You can see Fulmer do that same exact thing, uptick in velocity, focus on the stuff and work on the other thing on the side.
And I would be, I don't want to say aggressive. If I had the space, I'd really want to try to speculate in this bullpen because the Tigers is not as bad as everyone thinks. They'll they'll get some save situations, and AJ Hinch doesn't really have a history of going with a rotation of sorts. He likes to find a guy and stick with him. So I think eventually he will.
Yeah, he's treading water till somebody takes that role and runs with it. So, yeah, you're looking at Soto possibly versus Fulmer. I've just never been a Brian Garcia guy. And he got me four saves in the TGFBI last year, but they were all smoke and mirrors. There was always traffic on bases, and he was wriggling out of high leverage situations with bases loaded and getting a double play. I mean, BABIP comes calling. We all know regression comes to get you.
Houston Astros, Ryan Presley, again, the guy. If he were, again, were the abducted by aliens, who's the guy you run out and grab?
Nobody right now. That bull, the bridge to him, and I even had that in my What to Watch For tweet earlier. We're trying to figure out who's going to set him up. Joe Smith looked terrible last night. I think he gave up three base runners without recording an out. Brooks Raley got a save the other day, but he gave up an earned run yesterday. Blake Taylor gave up all three inherited runners scored when he came in a game last night. Paredes' velocity has been down. People keep talking about the Pirates want to trade Richard Rodriguez. If there was a natural team, and I know Houston doesn't have a lot of room under the cap, but if they could work out the money with Pittsburgh and they give them a good enough prospect, that sounds like a match made in heaven because they need somebody in there. And I know Pedro Baez is on his way back from COVID, but they need people like that and that bullpen to shore up those late innings setting up to Presley.
I think the arm I'm most interested in out of Presley is actually Brian Abreu at the moment, but there's, you know, it looks like they don't, you know, they have needs.
But they're using him as a multiple inning role.
Yeah.
They're trying to keep them stretched out.
Kansas City Royals is a bit of a nightmare. Greg Holland seemed like the obvious guy. There was actually news that came out during spring training. It wasn't direct from the manager, Mike Matheny, but it was suggested that they were going to go with a rotation. And so far it seems to be going that way. I noticed you have Holland, Jesse Hahn, and Scott Barlow listed. You don't have Mr. Wade Davis listed here. Just curious. I mean, he does. He nailed down a save so far, didn't he? Didn't he get one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Holland couldn't get people out, so Davis came in and got the last couple outs in that outing. So yes, but he was after that. They'd already used Hahn and Barlow, mm-hmm. so that was like we're stuck. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice story. And his velocity is up a little bit.
I should say
first outing he was up to 94.
Everyone's velocity. There's two teams that I'm definitely convinced have a hot gun for their home games, and that's the Royals and Brewers. So as much as Wade Davis has looked good in spring training, just keep that in mind, everybody. The Royals are all up. All their pitchers, all their starters, all their relievers, they're all up in velocity.
Yeah, and I've seen a little bit of that same thing. I mean, I was shocked to see the mile per hour readings for Josh Hader's first time out.
Yes,
he didn't do that all spring because he was in stadiums with the Statcast a couple of times in spring training. But as far as that, at the end of last year, Holland got a little nicked up, but they were using Holland. Hahn got two saves. Barlow got one down the stretch at the end of 2020. So I think Matheny, once they traded Rosenthal, he went back to the, you know, pin the wheel on the closer. So all preseason, I hedged. I had that blue all preseason. And a couple of my followers kept teasing, like, when are you just going to give this to Holland? I'm like, because I don't trust him. So finally, the day I went white on him, Jesse Hahn gets the save. So that's what I get for not trusting my gut. So I'm going back to the blue. Holland could still end up getting the most saves in this bullpen. And this is another one of those murky situations where it feels like every week you're going to add the wrong guy. So people go out and get Hahn this week, and then Barlow gets the next one, and people go get Barlow next week, and then Stallman comes out of nowhere and gets one. So it's with trepidation. I don't trust how Matheny uses that bullpen. So I'd rather save the Maalox.
Yeah, this is almost where all these pitchers are probably going to be better than what you are going to get from one of the Detroit guys. But I'd rather invest in that situation only because there's like five names that could come out of Kansas City. If one of them were to land with a job, I would much rather have the Kansas City guys because they're the much more talented pitchers. But like you said, it's a dart throw. If you need to, I mean, if you're stashing someone, you can go for upside. If you need mm-hmm. saves, it's hard to invest in this bullpen right now. And if you have Holland, that's fine. But other than that, I mean, it's pretty difficult if you have other options. If you have no other options, it is what it is. But, you know, hey, good luck. if you had to roster one guy right now, not named Greg Holland, who would it be for you?
Barlow.
It would be Barlow. All right. Los Angeles Angels, not really much to say there. Chris Rodriguez has looked amazing, though. I mean, if Rossell Iglesias, again, abducted by aliens, who would be your guy?
Rodriguez has looked good, but I think they're going to keep him stretched out. He gave up a couple of runs yesterday. Mike Myers got the save, and I had that in my what to watch for the day before because Rizal pitched three of the first four games. So, and they did go with Myers. So at least that one made sense. So Myers is the next man up in that situation. I think they would keep Rodriguez in like that sixth, seventh inning kind of slot out there, and they. You know, now that they added Tony Watson and Chishakov waivers, so they've been mixing those guys in to provide some rest. So that added much needed depth to that bullpen, but they're going to burn Iglesias out if they keep using them like they did the first 4 days.
Yeah, I agree. Moving on to the Twins, that kind of turned it into a nightmare real quick. Early in the offseason, as much as people had some skepticism, Taylor Rogers was the guy, and then Alex Colome comes in. And there were some people that thought it was a timeshare, and then some that thought Colome was just, boom, going to be the closer. That was it. Rogers was down to the eighth. No one has looked outstanding. Hansel Robles, after having a very down year last year, especially with his velocity, comes back. He's looking solid. His velocity is way up. So how are you dealing with this situation?
I think you just stay the course if you have one of them. We have to remember in Milwaukee, Taylor Rogers was basically there to match up with Christian Yelich. So if you see the Twins are playing a team with a lefty masher that they really want to stifle batting like second or third, that's where Rogers, if he's up in the eighth inning, Rogers is going in. You have to pray that guy's slated to hit in the ninth. And you know, it didn't work out the first time because they used Rogers and he pitched great. And then Colome gave up the hit to Yelich and then the go ahead run after that. But that's, they're just playing the percentages. So if like I said, if the stud lefty hitter's up in the eighth inning, you're going to see Taylor Rogers in there. Now, if he's in the ninth, if Yelich come up in the ninth in one of those without being up in the eighth like he had been, then I think Rogers would have been in there for that save chance because he's been – his velocity's up and he's been looking much better this year. So if you have Colomé and Rogers, you just stay the course.
The New York Yankees, if you were looking to handcuff – like you have a team and the way you want to spend one of your last roster spots, let's say if you have a little of the deeper benches, you want to handcuff a number one closer. Cause if they were to go away, you'd get someone who landed in a job. Chad Green, some people rostered for the opening weekend because Chapman was suspended for a couple of games. Green comes in the first game in like the fifth inning, everyone panics. He does end up getting the save in the next game. Who would you rather roster between Chad Green and Aaron Bummer?
Probably Green.
Green. Okay.
He's got a lot less competition. That White Sox bullpen has a bunch of live arms. So I'd rather, you know, and the other arm of intrigue there has been Jonathan Loaisiga. He's been pitching very well, but he's still good in that multi-inning role, but he's been mowing people down. That's another guy where, you know, especially in like a head-to-head league, if he has starting pitcher eligibility on a day you don't have starting pitchers active, you can slot him in there and hope maybe get a vulture win and protect your ratios and get a few strikeouts. He's looked fantastic.
He's one of my – definitely, if you were going that route, I tried to draft a lot of those guys this year. Freddie Peralta was one of them. Now he's a starter, but whatever. He's still going to be valuable. But, yeah, Loaisiga, definitely someone I was very interested in for that same reason. He looks electric. But I agree with you. Chad Green, I think if you put out a Twitter poll and ask people who they were more interested in, Bummer or Green, Bummer would probably win going away. But I agree with you. I'd rather have Chad Green. The Oakland A's. Trevor Rosenthal had a groin injury, I want to say. Was it a groin injury in spring training?
Initially, yes.
And then he came back, looked strong, and then, boom, he goes out with a shoulder discomfort. So right now they have a little bit of a rotation. One thing that we'll just start with, let's just start with the man himself who went down, Rosenthal. There's been no updates, which is concerning, I would think. So I would want to invest here. For the most part, a lot of people have probably went out and picked up Jake Diekman just because that would seem like the obvious move as he was the closer to end last season. But Sergio Romo is a guy who has plenty of experience. Lou Trevino is someone that of the three is maybe the best pitcher. So what would your priority be here between 12 and 15 teams? Are you just Diekman, or do you kind of like investing in either of the other two compared to some of the like other dart throws we've discussed?
You're probably leaning Diekman just based on the pedigree from last year. We just have to know that for as many strikeouts as he gets, he does have a high walk rate. We can't ignore that and hope for the best. I mean, Romo works better as like the Robin to a Batman, like he did last year with Taylor Rogers. So, you know, one person gets most of the saves and it's almost like exact same situation right now in Oakland. So you've got a better left-handed reliever that'll probably get most of the saves. But if there's a day they don't like the matchups or Diekman needs a day off, then Romo can step in and do it. But oh, poor Oakland, man, bad mojo at the start of the year here. Tough scheduling and tough results so far, but the better days lie ahead. So you just remain patient and hope some of those things come through. And you are 100% correct. It's been radio silence. I didn't get a chance to go through all the things last night, but later this evening, I'll be trying to read all of the MLB and the Athletic beat writer updates and see if there's anything, but I have not seen anything on Rosenthal, which does not give me a warm fuzzy.
Yeah, no one loves putting out updates like teams when someone's looking good. They're like, oh, he's at his schedule. They love to put it out there. And if it's not out there, it's a concern. You have AJ Green. Why? Football mode. AJ Puck, you have him highlighted in green as a stash candidate. They were hoping to have him start the year in the rotation. That did not work out that way. They bring him up as another arm out of the bullpen. The way his health has gone, he definitely seems like maybe going into a closer's role, he could end up being one of those like maybe dominant guys. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way his career will turn. Is that just kind of the thinking here with three yes. non-dominant guys in the back of that pen where he could just outshine them all?
Yes. If they get frustrated or they just realize that he can't, no pun intended, shoulder the load as a starter, that he's better off in the bullpen. you know, we've seen his velocities down. He had a bunch of strikeouts last night, but still walked too many guys. I just think if given the run and high leverage, I think he would excel. He has the look, you know what I mean?
Yes.
As a reliever. I don't know that he can sustain being a starter.
I think, yeah, eventually they have to realize that he's too talented to continue to allow him to get hurt starting and just maybe try to convert him, because he could be a beast. Mm-hmm. Seattle Mariners, Rafael Montero is obviously like the guy, but as a Mets fan, I'm still bitter about him. He's not a dominant closer. Kendall mm-hmm. Graveman's actually looked very solid. This mm-hmm. is some place where if I was going to look for a stash, if I had IL spots, Munoz is someone I absolutely would be sticking in a IR spot or IL spot if you have the room. There's obviously tons of guys that are injured. Not everyone can afford to do that. But Graveman, of all the guys we talked about so far, if you were just looking to stash somebody, I kind of like him the most of the moment, because mm-hmm. I think Montero will either be traded or maybe just lose the job.
Yeah, we'll have to see. And you know, I think Seattle's planning for next year. If they do okay this year, they're all right with it. But I don't think they're going to rush Logan Gilbert, though he'll get some run later in the year. You know, there were no rush to bring up Kelnick, and you're seeing that. So they're kind of showing you what they're going to do. And if they could trade Montero to a team later on that needs a setup reliever, I think they will do it, knowing that they've got Munoz coming in the wings. They signed Ken Giles to pitch in high leverage next year. So they're almost like two streets ahead. So they're just using these guys and showcasing them, and they will be happy to trade them and keep either getting draft picks or more guys to restock the minors or address a clear need if they see it.
Yeah. I mean, that's as far as you can go there. Kenny Middleton, I mean, I think we've proven he's probably not going to, he would need a lot of dominoes to fall in order to be a player in the bullpen here.
And he's a roller coaster. Oh, yes. My God. He's either all on or gives up three home runs.
The Tampa Bay Rays, it's Castillo and Fairbanks. We know Castillo obviously needs to be owned in 100% of all formats. Does Fairbanks, should he be owned in all 12 team leagues? Is he someone that would you rather have Fairbanks or Cesar Valdez?
In a 12 team, I'll probably just go Valdez, because I know at least he's in the mix. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen Fairbanks in the ninth inning yet. You know, it's strange, because when I did first pitch for Baseball HQ, Joe Sheehan said that, you know, Tampa Bay does sometimes prefer to have a guy back there, even though last year was just an anomaly with 12 relievers getting a save. And at least early on, it's been Diego Castillo and nobody else. Now I'll say this, and tomorrow he'll be the opener or something goofy, but we're going to have to take them at their word right now. So I actually removed the blue on that one for the first time a couple of days ago after he got the second save in a row, because I think Fairbanks worked in the sixth that day. And so we'll see. With trepidation, I'll say it's Diego's job to lose, and you know, you can hang on to Fairbanks, but if there's somebody you know that's going to be in better save situations, maybe take a look at him. Of course, I hype up Fulmer, and he pitched the sixth inning, but, you know, let him keep doing well. He's got time to move up the chain. Actually, if you're a stasher, that's good for us.
You know what it is sometimes I can't. Sometimes I can't roster a bad pitcher, even if he's a closer, as we'll talk about the Texas Rangers in a second. But the Rays, I love Shane McClanahan, and I would love him to get an opportunity.
Yes. But absolutely.
If he got one save, I don't know how excited I'd be, because it would tell me, all right, this is going to be a nightmare. But he's one of those pitchers where I wish he was on another team. Everyone's like,
he is a live arm.
Yeah.
Now they just lost Chaz Rowe too. So once the Super 2 day passes, you're going to see a few of these guys get up there ASAP. They're not going to keep watching Chris Mazza and Jeffrey Springs and these guys they got from the Red Sox that they're trying to throw against the wall because it's not working, and they're going to get frustrated and say, okay, we got to bring up the young guns that we need up here. So I think it's only a matter of time before we see McClanahan, Fleming, and a few of these other arms get up there and start doing more things.
I think the Rays AAA team, their pitching staff is better than a lot of major league pitching staffs. I'm not kidding. At least as far as potential.
And we don't even know how they're going to use Patino. I mean, that's another wild card.
Yep. The Texas Rangers, this is what I'm talking about when I say I look at Peter Fairbanks and I look at Ian Kennedy. I'm like, I know Ian Kennedy is going to get saves. I don't want to roster Ian Kennedy, though, because I know he sucks. But we've seen him. We've seen him have success. So, you know, that's just a, you know, a bias of mine. The Rangers are going to get saves, and it looks like he's the guy.
His velo's up.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I guess
they were saying there was a calf injury last year, which affected his performance. And I guess his relationship with Michael Young, being former teammates, kind of got him into Texas in the first place. And it was about a month ago. They're like, oh, well, he came in here in case they needed a closer. I mean, and now here we are. This is another team where you got to hope the bridge is decent enough to get him the save chance, because we've seen it's not too bad targeting Texas pitching in DFS hitting or in leagues where you can stream hitters, because Kansas City was tearing them up.
Here's the thing with Kennedy is the obvious thought would be Julio Rodriguez will be back sooner than later. Jonathan will be back June, maybe.
And hopefully DeMarcus Evans at some point, yes. But he had the lat. So, I mean, there's a lot of people. So, yes, you're right. Kennedy is a rodeo. You stay on the bull and try and get 6 to 8 saves. And then once he kicks you off, you believe him and you move on and get somebody else.
Well, I think
you make it a fungible spot.
I think the sad thing about it is there's so many great arms coming. Any of them could close. I think Hernandez is the guy that most people would want in the role, and he's going to, you know, he needs a little time, but if Ian Kennedy right now does the job and does the job adequately, it may not matter how well they're pitching, because the Rangers are going to finish in last place with or without them probably. Mm-hmm. So they're going to want to probably build up Kennedy's value, just like they were going to before Jose Leclerc went down, so they can maybe trade him. So
yep.
You stash all these guys only for Ian Kennedy just to keep the job anyway. I mean, it's the smart move by the Rangers to do, right? You know, just let them close and trade them. The Blue Jays, this is a fun one. Everyone at Fab Bids bid like, I don't know, $500 I've seen, or more of $1,000 on Julian Merriweather.
There was one, I think somebody said there was an unopposed $450 bid in the NFBC for Merriweather. Unopposed. So that
unopposed
means no one
is actually unopposed is. I think it's egregious to spend that erroneous. Much, but unopposed is a little ridiculous, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, we'll see. You see those things and you take with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
I think Jorge wrote this, your coworker wrote this up very well. And I have been saying the same thing, as people were messaging me nonstop. And I said, well, what happened if the heart of the Yankees order was in the ninth inning and he pitches the eighth? Is anyone spending a dime on him? So Romano is the stopper, which means he's going into the highest leverage moment. So if it's in the eighth inning, then he's pitching the eighth inning. But if it's in the ninth inning, then he'll be in the ninth inning. Toronto's already come out and said Merriweather will not work in back-to-back games. So that's, to me, that's not a closer. If you can't pitch on back-to-back days, it's hard to be considered the closer. And I think they'll manage Romano's workload too. So they need Dolis to get back into form, because I think they need three arms to be able to handle those high leverage innings. Because I think we all believe that Toronto's going to be a very good team, and they have a chance to do some damage if they can get starting pitching. And Steven Matz made people happy yesterday. We'll have to see how all this shakes out, but those bids on Merriweather were crazy. You know, I thought about it, but I didn't go in. I got Jose De Leon for $1 and a couple of other things, and said, you know what, I'm going to save my money for later down the road whenever the Fabapalooza weekend arrives.
I put in bids for Merriweather. Just, he's good, and I think he'll get some saves. But
oh, he's, you know, very good.
I didn't get him. I ended up getting like Jake Diekman. You know, again,
read his injury history. I mean, Merriweather's 29. I mean, it's not like this is a 25-year-old that's finally breaking through. I mean, he's had a litany of injuries, and God bless him for I mean, you watch his stuff, it's electric. However, we just, you know, if Jordan Romano gets the save today, then there's gonna be a lot of angry people. And you know, I'm not the one that's gonna say I told you so, but it's, you have to understand, eyes wide open when you do these things, and you have to listen to what the team tells you.
Yeah, I put out a tweet that just said, all I basically said was, if you think Julian Merriweather's the everyday closer for the Blue Jays, I think you're going to be disappointed. And that just comes down to, a lot of people see this guy and they assume he's 22. He's not. Jordan Romano is being treated like the best reliever in that bullpen Whether that ends up being the truth or not, as far as getting him saves is another question, but he's being treated as the best reliever in the pen. And Merriweather, they said that he won't pitch on back-to-back days, like you said. So at best, he's in a platoon at best,
right?
Because he's just being limited that way. So
he could get the save today, but we don't know.
Yeah. But the big takeaway, especially in 12 team leagues, is if you have the room, Jordan Romano should absolutely be owned. If anyone dropped him, pick him up, because a lot of people have weeks.
Yeah, and things like that just happened. You really need to pay attention to who got dropped while all these other people are beating it. There's a bunch of save speculations this weekend. So see who got dropped, because there might be somebody that you need that fills something that you want that got flushed. Those are sometimes just as important as who got added, as who got dropped.
Speaking of someone who probably got dropped, I'm going to mess up this name. Is this Stefan Crichton?
Crichton.
I have the pronunciation guide. Chris over at Baseball Pod sent it to me. I need to look it over. There's a lot of names.
I have to read it over. He sent it to me as well.
I gotta say, there's a lot of priority names I went to memorize, and Stephen Crichton wasn't one of them. Joaquin Soria is on the IL, and now they are in like a weird platoon, which Chris Davinsky, which I think a lot of people didn't realize was even on the Diamondbacks until he got the save, picks up the save. What would you do here?
He was an NRI.
I would pick up Crichton. I mean, he had the job.
His whip right now is 3.
I know. It's just, I mean, Ginkle,
he throws 92 miles an hour. I mean, he's another smoke and mirrors guy, just like Garcia was last year. I mean, I think what happens is we remember that they were getting saves down the stretch in 2020. So it's like, okay, well, we'll give him a shot.
Yeah.
This whole Arizona thing, see, you're ignoring my boy. I've been driving the JB Bukauskas hype train for over a month. So if I'm doing anything with Arizona, I'm going to stash like Bukauskas but I have to have a deep roster because he's not in the majors. I'm just going to stash him and hope a month or 2 months down the road, he gets a shot. I know we have to take spring training stats with a grain of salt, but I think he put up either 14 or 15 strikeouts to no walks. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at with a former top prospect starting pitcher that can't handle starting. So now he can just throw his fastball and slider as a reliever. That's tailor made to success in a bullpen.
I think the only Diamondbacks reliever I have any shares of at all, and I'm in quite a few leagues, is just in Draft Champions League, which is just draft and hold. For anyone listening, it's just like 750 players are drafted. There's no waiver wire. I have Kevin Ginkle, and I drafted him towards the very end just because I assumed he can always come out of nowhere to improve. And I'm pretty happy about it right now, but we'll see what happens. If it's not JB, like I think he's a great pick. You're saying Bukauskas.
But that's a long view. I mean, you're two streets ahead. That you're not going to get saves tomorrow from him. Ginkle's in the mix. Davinsky's obviously in the mix. I won't count out Crichton. Anything can happen there. You can see like Riley Smith get a 2-inning or 3-inning save on days to rest the bullpen. We'll know a lot more, hopefully, at the end of this week as teams start to show us more who they are. But this is another one of those fluid areas where I don't know if I really want to dip my toe in the water or spend any real FOB capital to find out.
The Atlanta Braves, with Chris Martin going down injured with his injury history, I mean, I think it was Will Smith anyway. I'm not sure this was even a split job with Martin healthy. It could have been because they were, you know, Martin was doing very well, but it was looking more like it was just the Smith job. Go ahead.
Yeah, people were willing that into existence. I mean, they're paying Will Smith an awful lot of money to be a setup reliever.
Yes.
They wanted him to do it last year. He had the COVID battle. He pitched better. He had a very good spring. You know, I do think Martin will get some ancillary saves. They're saying today, I saw a tweet that suggested from David O'Brien saying it's not as serious as it could be. So they don't think it's an IL stint situation for Martin, but still this is going to be, Will Smith has only appeared in one game. He can go back to back today and tomorrow if need be and get some saves and people will take a deep breath and relax. Even if Martin gets in there, I still see this as like a 70-30 split at best.
The Chicago Cubs, that this ironically seems like one of the more cut and dry ones out there. Kimbrel looked like he should retire in spring training and he's come out of the gate looking solid. There's another guy I have in a lot of draft champions leagues and his name is Rowan Wick. because mm-hmm. I didn't like anyone else in this bullpen, and I knew Kimbrel was gonna, in my brain, I thought Kimbrel was for sure losing this job. So I had
a long season.
Yeah.
It's a long season, and this is another one. How the Cubs season goes, this is another team that, if like Boston, if they start losing and it doesn't look like the playoffs are on the horizon, they're going to trade Kimbrel. He's a free agent. There's a clause he won't be able to meet in his contract for the team option to be picked up, because he hasn't finished enough games. And if he's pitching well and they want to sell high, they can't. Just going to be kind of up to them. But they need him. They need him to stay on track. The best thing I read was Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic wrote, if Kimbrel's fastball is tailing, then he's not right. If it's riding, he's good. So his last two outings, the fastball has been riding, then he's in the right place. But if you turn on a game and you're trying to figure out what to do with Kimbrel and you see his fastball starting to tail, sell.
You know, I've been out on Kimbrel for years, and then he had that good. He ended 2020 really well, albeit a little example. Yep. I picked up a couple shares. I watched spring training. I'm like, what? I like the throw of the paper.
I was in the same boat. I took him to TGFBI, and I could have taken Will Smith. And I'm like, what was I thinking? Because I was like, clear roll. I don't have to worry about Chris Martin. I was sweating bullets. And then his last spring outing, I saw the fastball, and it was doing the ride. I was like, okay, all right, I'll take a break. And then he struck out the side on Saturday, I believe. And then I took a nice deep sigh of relief for now. And again, we're not out of the woods, but it's much better than it was.
So everyone in the industry or anyone playing fantasy baseball should know to ignore spring stats for most people, but especially for closers. Some dominate, some get lit up, and then you just go into the spring training. But it's hard to ignore some, like it was Craig Kimbrel. The Cincinnati Reds. I always assumed this was Amir Garrett's job because he announced it was his job. The Reds never said anything, but he did. No one else did. He just said, I'm the job. Like, he had the swagger. Give me the job. I want the ball. Make me the closer. And then he got injured and with the forearm and like, oh no, what's happening? Sims was hurt. Doolittle wasn't ready. TJ Anton was hurt. Thurlinson was hurt. No one knew what was going to happen. And then Garrett came back in spring, struck out like 9 in a row. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting thing. You still have Garrett and Sims fighting for it. And then you have Doolittle. We're talking about velocity. He's up like 3.5 miles per hour. He's actually one of the biggest.
Out of nowhere.
Players. Yes.
He did. That was never in the spring. So we don't know if they got a hot gun too. But yeah, that just, I mean, I watched his velo all spring. It was 92, 91, 9. And then, yeah, last night, zip. I was like,
well, say he's been in a couple games. His velo's been up the whole time. Not everyone a few people on that team are down. I don't think it's a hot gun situation. So again, I'm not suggesting to go out there and go get Sean Doolittle.
He might have been saving his bullets for the regular season.
But it's interesting.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah, that. And last night when Garrett was giving up traffic, he gave up the home run to Brian Reynolds. And then people are on base, and it was TJ Anton warming up, but of course they had already used Sims and Doolittle before him. But he was the backup plan if things went off the rails for Garrett in that outing. Any one of those four could end up getting saves here. That's just what you have to realize going in. You're hoping Garrett gets like 65-70% of them, and the other guys are kind of fighting them out, but we'll have to see how it all processes. I'm curious who gets the next one. Definitely.
I have shares of quite a few Reds in the bullpen. I got Garrett because, again, if you're going to announce you're the closer and no one's going to tell you no, I just assume it's a coin flip. They'll give it to him. I have Sims after the forearm thing. I picked up anyone where Sims wasn't rostered because he still had a forearm problem. It could come back. Mm-hmm. It's a reasonable thing. And of course, TJ, I don't care where he is. He can start, he can middle relieve, he can close. I want to roster him no matter what. He's so talented that I'll just put him in my lineup and go do whatever you're going to do for the week, at least for the time being. The Rockies, this looked like it was going to be an issue for Daniel Bard, but his chief competition ended up having surgery for blood clots. Yeah, so
poor Oberg.
Yeah, poor Berg. I mean, I thought he was going to come back and do well, but I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just Bard, and there's no one else really worth even considering. I mean, Michael Givens, I think he did better in Baltimore than people gave him credit for. His mm-hmm. background statistics are always better than his final line, but he would be a disaster, I think, in Colorado.
Yes. Yeah. That, best case scenario there is Givens turns around and pitches well on the road so they can deal him.
Yeah. The Dodgers, this is very interesting. Kenley Jansen's been fine. If he came out and get a 5-out save, but we've seen him. They benched him in the playoffs. So he could obviously lose his job at any time. Corey Knebel, I mean, Blake Treinen should be the obvious guy to take over. If Jansen went down, he would be the guy everyone rushed to get. But you mentioned earlier, Knebel did pick up a vulture save. Another guy, his velocity is way up as well. So I'm interested there. I haven't picked up any shares, but he's definitely on my radar.
Yep, we'll keep tabs on all that. That's another team we haven't gotten to Milwaukee yet, but I'm not 100% sold that Devin Williams is completely healthy, and I don't know how they will if they stay in a race or if they fall out. That's another team like the Cubs. Like, that Central holds a lot of keys to the trade deadline based on who's doing what in the standings as that goes down the stretch, because we know people have been asking about Hader. And I think a team like Los Angeles or San Diego, if he was the key to their postseason, would pay a king's ransom to get him at the trade deadline. I'm not saying that'll happen, but that's something we have to pay close attention to.
You know what'll happen. The Dodgers are just collecting
Infinity
Stones.
If that's what they need, they've got the farm system to help out the Brewers if that's going to be it. I mean, they've pushed everything in so far. If that's going to be the difference between them and a repeat title, I'd be very curious to see what they get, if they get like Kybert and a couple of other prospects in return, because that seems like a match made in heaven.
The Marlins, Anthony Bass, you have him as the runaway closer. He hasn't looked terrific.
Well, his bounce back was better. His first save was ugly, but then they got him right out the next day and he retired aside in like 9 pitches. So,
I agree with you that Bass is just the guy, but I think Yimi Garcia is probably one of the more interesting setup guys that aren't in a obvious platoon. I think he's got to be at the top of the list of guys that should be rostered that are not currently in the job, right?
He is, but he's another guy that can be a free agent. And so at some point you would think Miami's going to deal him because I don't know if they can repeat the awesomeness that they'd had last year. I'm willing to see it happen. But if the Marlins aren't going to make the playoffs, it would make sense to move him. They've got interesting young arms like Zach Pop, Jordan Holloway, and other people that could slot into that role in the eighth inning. If they can add to the roster looking into 2022.
Nothing really to discuss with the Brewers. Hader's the closer, and I don't believe there's many leagues that Devin Williams, healthy or not, is not already rostered in. I do not believe there's, unless they both disappeared, I don't think you can even invest in any arm, right?
No, not at the moment, but there's a few people maybe down the road. I really want to see what, and again, this is nothing bad. I have nothing against Devin Williams. I love the airbender and everything else. But that shoulder thing at the end of last season just gives me a little shoulders and pitch and relievers make me nervous.
The Mets, as much as people want to say that there is ever going to be an issue, I think Edwin Diaz is very, very, is about as safe as any closer in baseball. Mm-hmm. Miguel, if anything were to go down, Miguel Cash, I'm not sure. I mean, Trevor May would be the odds on favorite, but ever since he came over from Baltimore, you know, he struggles with command, kind of like the way Edwin Diaz used to be, but he's starting to morph into Edwin Diaz. And it wouldn't shock me at all for him to be the guy that would be relied upon, or he would be a closer in the future if it ever came down to it, because he's really electric. And I love that you have Riley Gilliam with a high upside. I've seen him in spring training 2 years in a row, and I don't understand why they don't give this guy more of a shot, because he looks legit too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, they're doing things right. We'll have to see how they do all that. I saw somebody jokingly on Twitter yesterday suggest that they should use an opener for DeGrom so then he can finish his own damn games.
They took him out in 77 pitches yesterday, which I believe he threw his last pitch was for 101 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour. Yeah,
I would have been spitting tacks. I get it.
So terrible. The Philadelphia Phillies, Hector Neris was named the closer. I mean, thank you for naming a closer. Joe Girardi, hierarchy is awesome. Jose Alvarado, a lot of people invested high in, but I mean, he's a left-hander. So if you're going to have like Juan Soto coming in division, he's going to go for that inning regardless of when it is. So I think he was always screwed for, you know, I mean, as far as fantasy goes,
You need JoJo Reyes to come back for him to get more save opportunities. Now, he got the one last night, but that was because Neris pitched him three of the first four games like Iglesias did.
And Archie Bradley, it actually surprised me. The way Neris handled last year, I know a lot of people were on him from the beginning. The only person I invested in was Archie Bradley, just because I assumed he had, you know, he had a lot of experience. Neris didn't do too well. I thought that it would just be the other way around. I thought Alvarado would always set up, but I thought it'd be Bradley in and Neris out. But Neris has looked good so far. Both Neris and Bradley's velocity is down. While Alvarado's is way up. But you can't own Bradley right now, though. I mean, you can't roster him because they named Neris the closer, and unless he struggles, you're just wasting a roster spot.
Yes.
Pittsburgh Pirates. I have a few shares of David Bednar. He's really good. I mean, he's unfortunate he's on the Pirates, but like you said earlier, they're going to trade Richard Rodriguez probably, right?
They held on to Keone Kayla too long last year, and I think they learned that lesson, so they know they need to trade Rodriguez sooner rather than later. So hopefully, I would say mid-May, if they can, they'll deal him. Unless something happens to another team where they need them in a desperation, May or June, you would think. I mean, the beat writers were suggesting Rodriguez could get traded before the season started, but it never came to fruition. So now it's just going to be a matter of running him out there, letting him get saves, build his value. And then once he goes on, you're hoping Bednar has taken over the eighth inning from Kyle Crick, and then he's ready to rock.
For today, I believe you just put it out there to everyone in like a casual 12 team league. I think Kyle Crick would be the guy most people would assume would get the job. We've seen him because we've seen him do the job last year for a limited period of time. So I do like you have Bednar there in the, we both agree he would be the guy to go after over Crick, right?
I think so. Doesn't mean Pittsburgh agrees with me, but yes.
Yeah, it is Pittsburgh.
we're on team Bednar. I'm with you.
San Diego Padres, kind of not quite like the Phillies. There's been no one named. We talked about this. I don't know if we talked about this on air or just beforehand. Mark Melanson, no one talked about him, but he just seems like that's it. It seems like it's a wrap. Like it's just his job, even though
he's just a saves vulture. He showed up in Atlanta, took over that bullpen, and now he shows up in San Diego. He must have pictures of people or whatever, but, and it, you know, you don't fully invest in spring training, but he had more walks and strikeouts in spring. I mean, he did not look very good at all. There was always people on base. I think his whip was over two. And then all of a sudden he's out there for the first save chance. And I was like, what? And he's, you know, I guess the veterans just know what they need to do in spring to get ready. And it appears he's in that role even without being named it, because he's got two saves. And even last night they used Pagan, and they used Pomeranz in a game that they lost. So that, you know, if nothing else, that really insulates them as the arm to own right now. And I will admit it, I whiffed on that one. Every beat writer wrote Pagan with Pomeranz sprinkled in, and it's been Melanson by himself. And I apologize. I did not see that coming.
Oh, it's also a new wave in how teams are handling stuff. I mean, all the industry experts thought it was Pomeranz in the offseason. And then all the beat writers said it was going to be Pagan. But the fact is, Melanson is not the best pitcher of the three, but maybe it's just a matter of they have a really talented bullpen. They can afford to put Pomeranz and Pagan out there in the earlier game, high leverage situations. They know Melanson has the mindset and the temperament to just handle the ninth inning, because that's its own separate situation. So I think that just happens to be it. He's not the best pitcher, but he's just the guy that's going to handle the ninth. And
he's this year's Kinsler.
Yeah, exactly. Jake McGee, another guy, he looks like he's 3 for 3. He's the guy. Doesn't matter if he's only throwing fastballs up there. Maranta's good. Tyler Rogers is very talented, but unless he screws up, it just looks like it's Jake McGee.
Yep. And they have a bunch of lefties, so it's not like he has to be a situational guy. Especially, you know, I think there's three or four lefties in that bullpen besides him. So that's not a major issue. I've got a few McGee shares. He was coming pretty cheap, at the end.
Yeah, that was surprising how inexpensive he was, because if Maranta was healthy the whole time, maybe it would have been a different situation. It would have made sense for him to be inexpensive, but with Maranta down, I think I was surprised how inexpensive McGee was.
If Moronta was hitting 98 on the radar, I think we'd be having a different conversation, but he's still sitting 94.
St. Louis, this could be, I don't want to say the biggest headache, the most intriguing headache in all of fantasy. Alex Reyes is currently being wheeled out there in the ninth inning, which fantastic. I love Alex Reyes. But, I mean, Jordan Hicks, we know how fast he can throw. He'll be, I mean, 101-mile-an-hour sinker is probably made to be a closer. And but mm-hmm. Giovanni Gallegos is probably the safest option of the three, probably the third least likely option of the three to be the closer. Yeah. But with
he's the stopper.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's the only guy without the gigantic injury history that the other guys have. So, yeah, what do you do here? Who do you have confidence in?
Well, I mean, Vlad Sedler tweeted it last night, and that's what I did. In the TGFBI, I took Jordan Hicks, and then in my next to last pick, I took Alex Reyes. I wanted to back him up. I reached out to Craig Mish in the preseason because he does have a little bit of former knowledge with the Cardinals. And I said, so what are we doing? He's like, well, they want Hicks, but keep an eye on Reyes. So I did exactly what Craig said. And I did write about that a few times. And this, you know, they're going to stretch Reyes out eventually. So he's basically a placeholder. So again, you can hold on to Hicks because once he, again, here's another one. He has a show he can work on back to back. He has not done that yet. He said he was a little sore after his first outing. And then he got back in yesterday, had a very good inning, two whiffs on six swings, and his velocity ticked back up to where it normally was. It was down in spring. So it looks like he's starting to get acclimated and back to himself. So maybe early to mid-May, Hicks takes over, and then they can start using Reyes. They quoted he's a unicorn, that they want him to be a 100-inning reliever. And he'll start absorbing more of the, you know, fifth and sixth innings when it's needed and things of that nature. So he'll go from being a saves guy to a vulture winning guy, hopefully. So he still maintains value in 15-team leagues. I think that's how you treat it. And again, I have nothing against Giovanni Gallegos, but even last year without anything, whatever, he didn't get clear run as the closer. I just think they want him to be their multi-inning, high leverage. We're going to put you where we need you guy, whether it's the one out in the seventh or three in the eighth and things of that nature. That's where he seems to be pigeonholed, and it's nothing against him, but they treat him like their best reliever, and that's where he's going to work.
That being said, because I agree with everything you said, and you said you did your work, you've written about it all off season. I still would like to have Gallego shares, but I'm pretty fine with what he is. Mm-hmm. I think
and with his strikeout ability.
Yeah,
he'll still get you vulture wins, and he might get you 3 to 5 saves. I mean, there's going to be days where he might get an out in the eighth, and then they let him go out and finish the ninth, you know,
especially they want to give Hicks the day off. Moved and, out, right?
Yep. Yeah. They want to give Hicks the day off. So he'll just finish one of them. So absolutely. It's not to say he won't get saves. It's just going to be, you know, a smaller share, 10%.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you have the room and you can put out a, you know, just a people have been rostering solid middle relievers for a long time, and this mm-hmm. year is a good time to do it. You said Jordan Hicks is his average velocity is down like 3.4. I have him right now, but he has touched over 100 already. So, I mean, at mm-hmm. least you like to see that. There's plenty of people that are down that have not even reached their average from last year. Hicks at least is touching 100 already. So he's well on his way to being ready sooner or later. And the last mm-hmm. team is the Washington Nationals, which is a whole weird thing with Brad Hand being currently out, we think, with COVID. Yep. Has that been confirmed? Or
yeah, he wasn't on the opening day roster.
Okay, I just don't know if this is like COVID or is he just being quarantined, therefore he's not allowed.
Right, because we don't know, because like, you know, they had Garrett Cooper on a COVID thing and then he was activated today.
And so, Trey Turner, starting lineup, right? He was listed
he didn't
above
work out yesterday.
Yeah,
he didn't work out yesterday with the team, but today he's playing. So correct. This will be interesting. So is it Hudson or Rainey is what we're watching tonight?
Yeah. I mean, I think long term, it would be nice to see Rainey go out there and do well. Mm-hmm. That would be the thing that would be most useful.
He's the stash guy.
Yeah. The love or hate the NFL. They get the injury news out there accurately and quickly. We do not have that in Major League Baseball, unfortunately, because, you know, fantasy baseball is not betting, you know, mm-hmm. in, at least the, you know, the eyes of the league. So that is everyone. We've talked obviously about a ton of names. Is there anyone that I know you went in JB Bukauskas? Give what are some names that you think these are for more for, I guess, the 12 team and 15 team, the guys you're excited that maybe aren't on the radar now. Everyone just spent $500 on Julian Merriweather. Who is a player that you think that given the opportunity or something opens up, like you think is the guy that you should go get for a buck now? Like I have David Bednar. I really like him. I have him. I got him for a dollar. It's still the Pirates, but I mean, do you have any names that you think are that the audience should know that go get them for a dollar now before they're $500 in, you know, several weeks?
You might be able to wait a month or two, but yeah, you're looking at, you know, if the Cubs ever did make a trade, would they bring up Braylon Marquez to work in those late high leverage innings? I mean, he's already hit 100 in the majors. He's had command issues, so we don't know if he's going to stick as a starter. That's someone we're keeping paying close attention to. In Detroit, a name down the road is Jason Foley. He was lighting up the guns at the alternate site, so that's a name you want to keep in mind because we all know even if the names we talked about earlier with Troy, you know, we're not confident they're going to stick. So if you're in a deep AL only or a keeper dynasty thing and you want to put a guy away, that's somebody. We're keeping tabs on Sam Delaplane in Seattle if they decide to trade Montero and Graven. Because I don't know, I love Munoz, but I don't know if they're going to rush him into high leverage. I think they would treat him almost like Hicks, where it would be a month in the majors and let him just get his feet under him before they forced him into those situations. We spoke about Shane McClanahan and a few other of those baby Rays that might be on their way soon. You know, we never know. You could see McClanahan, Patino, or any of those other guys end up in high leverage if they need it or just become fluid guys. And you spoke to the Rangers situation with Joely, DeMarcus Evans. I think they really wanted Hernandez to be the stopper type person. I just don't know if his elbow will hold up for extra or multiple inning outings. And there's a bunch of names there. And then down the road too with San Francisco, you're keeping tabs on Camilo Doval. He's got a live arm. If Maranta can't handle or he has to get shut down, I think at some point he could be up and factoring in high leverage because all he'd have to do is get past Whistler and Rogers. Why don't, you know, they don't light up a radar gun or do things in a tremendous manner. Doval is another one who has the look.
The one I mentioned him earlier, I don't know if this is just, I'm just fascinated. I followed him ever since he was signed and there was rumors of the Hirokazu Sawamura coming over for the Red Sox. I don't believe in Matt Barnes.
Oh yeah. We spoke about Sawamura earlier, so I didn't really think we had to mention him, but yes, by June or July, there's a very good chance he's closing games in Boston. That's, yes, you know, he's been doing closer, well.
Yeah, fade closers who walk people.
Yeah, we just got to get him right. We got him throwing strikes, and we got to get him throwing that splitter with confidence. He's been a little tepid with it, and we just got to get him. Maybe he's getting used to the ball, which I think is a very viable thing, because it's different than the one they use in Japan. Once he's comfortable, he's wearing Uehara's number. I think that. Yeah, once Sawamura gets going, I think we're going to be seeing him on the pitching ninja gifts and all those other things. And if he gets that splitter diving in the dirt and getting really ugly swings, he's the closer of the future, at least for this season.
All right, Greg, thank you for joining us. Before we stop the show, let everyone know where they can find all your work this season. You know where they should follow you, just where they can find all your great information, where they can download the chart, all that good stuff.
Okay. The chart I usually pin daily. You can bookmark it. I know, what's his face? Yancey had it tweeted out there way in the early season that, you know, he was doing his NFBC draft and he showed my tab up there. But anyways, it's at GJEWETT9. I try and pin those usually early in the morning. I go through like today, I'll update the games as they happen the best that I can. Just try and cover, you know, we cover the closer, the stopper / the next guy in line, the stealth option, high future up. Upside, and then the multi-inning arms. I don't have enough time. I was thinking about adding a tandem tab, but Jesus Christmas, I got enough to do. But Fridays, my weekly articles about closers post on The Athletic. So if you're a subscriber, you can read those. I do a bunch of stuff for Fantasy Alarm as far as streaks and today the Behind the Breakout column posted. I talked about Lance McCullers adding the slider. And I know you're tracking the new pitches and velocity. I mean, when a guy like McCullers is adding a pitch to his arsenal, we have to pay attention to it. And all that stuff is that fantasy alarm. And on the days I don't post on The Athletic, I do updates, not every day. I did last week. You guys were spoiled because there was no school. But coffeeandclosers.substack.com. You can subscribe to those for free. And when I can get to them, I'm hoping to get one out tomorrow morning. I try and post, you know, it's basically my version of Jeff Zimmerman's great Mining the News series, but focused only on relief pitchers.
Which is awesome. And anyone who wants to catch Greg's work on The Athletic, they have a deal right now, I believe, going on where you can sign up for 6 months for $1 a month.
It's still going, but I'm not sure. Oh, I know. Well, I think last night might have been it, but yeah, they do.
I'm a liar. It may go double check everybody. It could be. But yeah,
if they don't give it to you, tell Nando, just bully them into giving you the deal.
Give me what I want. Everyone, you can follow me on Twitter at Matt Williams, MattWi77IMS. You can follow the show at Turn 2 Podcast. Go to rotofanatic.com, check out the Data Monster. We have all of our projections for the year and all of our custom analytics, which are great. A lot of my work is over at NBC Sports Edge now. I have the Tuesday column behind the numbers, where I also dig into Lance McCullers. A lot of the velocity stuff we already talked about, I go into detail about the more interesting names. McCullers, it's funny, like who else added the Tyler Glass now added the slider too. McCullers, he just came out of the gate and is like his most used pitch. It's like, hey, yeah, here's
he
a new
threw
slider.
It more than anything. I was like, what? Yeah, and he had a 40% whiff rate with it. So it's like, okay, well, let's see what you do. And I think he gets the Tigers next week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Maybe that'll keep him on, because he also his curveball usage was considerably down as well. So yeah, we'll see how that holds up over time. Thank you for listening to Turn 2 Podcast, everybody. We'll be back next week. See you, everybody.
My oh my, put me in, coach, I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn 2 in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn 2 in every way, so I turn to you 2 today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it into points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn 2. Turn 2. Turn 2, what they do? Win leagues. Catch out.